Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today, 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony.
Is it? I'm not believing anything you tell me today.
Not a word. Me.
Is it Wednesday?
It is Wednesday. Okay. Metro Rooter is our sponsor.
I'm not sure of anything you people tell me today.
Let me say factually, okay? we're in the bubble of fact now. I have not signed with any NFL team. I have not ever in my life had a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had, I would not be immediately taking to Twitter to trumpet that fact.
Ahead of that story.
Yes. So let's just get, hey, so sorry, everybody. Let me tell you right now what happened there. Those things did not happen. And those are not in any way associated with the first day of the month of April. Okay. That is the actual facts of the matter. Greg Jennings, I guess, got people twisted up a little bit last night. How did the Fat Tuesday show go last night with the Greg Jennings story? For folks who don't know, he tweeted out, I found a new team,
and
I'll announce it later on.
Here's what he did. He tweeted out at like 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon that he was looking forward to wrapping up this whole free agency thing, and I saw that tweet. And then right as I was getting ready to go on air last night, basically at 8 o'clock, around 7:30, he tweeted out, done deal. It's just those two words, done deal. It didn't say where. It didn't say who. There was no more information than that. So now I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I even put up something on my Facebook page talking about why he would be a good fit for Jacksonville after he had signed there.
Break it down,
with somebody,
Tony Smith.
Right? Like he had 2/3 of his snaps last year were in the slot. He was a very effective player from there. He's a veteran. That's the kind of guy, if they're going to sign a guy, he plays the position they're looking for. If he is coming to Jacksonville, it makes a lot of sense, right? It's still up there on my Facebook page on the Fat Tony Show. I'm fine with that. I don't mind putting my idiocy out there for everyone to see. So the show comes on at 8 o'clock, and I'm like, I don't know what Greg Jennings is doing. I don't know how somebody signs in the NFL, and nobody knows. Right? It's got me.
Right. The agent's going to put it out.
Right.
The agent wants you to know.
The story has me at this point. So I'm like, if we get any more updates throughout the show, I'll let you know. So we're going through that whole 8 o'clock hour. He tweets out something along the lines of, the media's not going to be leaking this story. Nobody in the Jennings camp is going to talk. Right? I'm going to release it when I want to. Fans, media, everyone's going to find out at the same time. Now I'm getting a little suspicious. A few minutes later, he tweets out the whole, I will announce at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And that's when I'm like, 1 a.m. Eastern. First of all, the Jags are out if it's 1 a.m. Eastern. And then I look over the clocks there in the studio, and I'm like, oh, it's March 31st. He's going to announce at 1 a.m. on April Fool's Day. I was like, dang it. I was like, for an hour and a half. He's got me. He had me for an hour and a half, and then I was like, it's probably an April Fool's joke, everybody. Jennings didn't sign in anyway.
But you know, that's the thing. That's what made it a good one, is that it's believable, you know, and there's nothing wild and crazy. Yeah, Greg Jennings found a home. He's going to tell us later. Maybe they want to make sure they have all the details on the contract finalized before.
I don't mind admitting that he had me until he put the time out there. Until he put what time he was announcing who he was going to, it had me. And then I was like, oh, come on. Really, 10 p.m. on the West Coast, 1 a.m. Eastern. I'm done with this.
Usually, I'm just happy, Tony, if I remember it's April 1st. So
right.
I don't get got, right?
I mean, I didn't remember. Honestly, I didn't remember. The time was so weird that I looked at, I was like, this whole thing feels so odd.
And it wasn't April 1st.
Right.
When it started.
So I looked over and I was like, oh my gosh, it's March 31st. Doggone it. He got me.
A couple of years, I talked to Donna Murphy to refresh my memory about this morning. I think what I said this like maybe 3 years ago, something along those lines. It was just one of those things. I found it amusing. Again, a believable thing. I believe I announced Donovan Darius would be the next inductee in the Pride of the Jags. Double D, if you're listening, which he does quite frequently whenever he's in town, you know, maybe one day. But I just announced it, and it seemed plausible, right? I mean, Donovan Darius, hard-hitting safety. Some people think he's the best defensive player that ever played here in Jacksonville. All right? You know, whatever your opinion is, you may totally disagree with that, but it wasn't out of the realm of possibility. Long-time Jag, good citizen, great citizen. Are you kidding me? All these things, they franchised him multiple times, so obviously they felt very strongly about him. And I just never got around to saying, you know, April Fools. I just let it, because I think that's the point of it. You don't have to, unless you've got some forum to do that. My show ended. I let it go. people lost their freaking minds.
Oh, yeah.
A handful of them did anyway.
No,
you know?
People go crazy about that. So
oh,
they don't.
You tricked me, you liar.
They don't like being tricked. Like, last night when I realized I had been tricked by Greg Jennings at about 9:30, I was like, that was pretty good, Greg. Like, the fact that you played it out the way you did, and then when I woke up this morning and went to the fake announcement where he's just like, April Fools or whatever on a website, watching the people's reaction to that who had stayed up till 1 a.m.
They're so mad. They're so mad. He is no longer welcome in Chiefs Nation. Ooh, you got us, all right?
Oh, can't you just admit he got you? Like, it's all right if he got you. That's what this day is about.
By the way, if you're going to get Macklin money, I get it. Otherwise, why would any receiver go to a team that didn't throw a touchdown to receiver last
you.
Year?
I'm with you.
I guess opportunity.
And the
would
other
be
question
the,
is, when the heck is Greg Jennings going to pick a team already?
Come on, Greg. We'll still take you. I'll still take him here in Jacksonville.
I'd love to have him here in Jacksonville, but come on, man. When's this going to happen?
Well, I guess a team's got to show interest. I guess Mark Long quickly threw water on the Jags being the team.
Everybody
last night,
did.
Right? Right. Well, I'm just my point being, maybe there's not that much interest in Greg Jennings here as we thought. Or maybe, you know, they have some level of interest, but Greg Jennings has a much higher opinion of his value to a football team. Who knows?
And who knows who Mark Long talked to before he tweeted that out, that it's not going to be Jacksonville. Look, I don't know. He was visiting Carolina at the time, and I saw people from Carolina coming out saying, if he signed, it's not Carolina.
Here,
right, because he hadn't signed anywhere, obviously. So if they were talking to sources inside these buildings that these reporters may have, and they're like, hey, did we sign Greg Jennings? Then they're going to be like, no, what are you talking about? No one signed Greg Jennings here. Right? That would be everywhere, because no one signed Greg.
Right.
So that doesn't mean that we don't have interest in Greg. It just means if you call and say, hey, did we sign Greg Jennings?
No, it wasn't us.
Right.
Correct.
That's all you're going to
get. There's no deal here.
Because he was pulling the wool over everybody's
eyes. Right. Maybe they have an offer out there. Maybe Greg Jennings' camp knows what they want, what have you.
I've really enjoyed Greg Jennings through this whole thing. The 3 weeks of interacting with the fans when they tweet him about what's great about their city and their team and their fan base. The fact that he's getting back to all these fans, he keeps kind of throwing those comments out there like, you know, I get a little tired of playing with bad quarterbacks, so maybe Green Bay is the place for me, that he's doing the spring break thing in San Diego, and then he has the April Fool's show. I'm glad that he has a sense of humor and a personality about this entire process.
Well, I mean, what's he going to do? Some GM not going to sign him because of that? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like he's being a bad citizen about any of that stuff. Bruce Irvin, on the other hand, Seattle's own Bruce Irvin, tweets out this. He says, before this hits the media, was this on Twitter he did it? He announced it on
It was on Twitter.
It was on Twitter.
I went and looked at it, yeah.
It says, before this hits the media, I just want to apologize to my fans and the Seahawks organization once again, because he's been suspended in the past for PEDs. I made a terrible decision driving after I had a few drinks. I will do everything to get your trust back, and I will become a better person after this. So, I mean, you send that out there, that seems like it's reasonable. He did that at 1 a.m. last night. Again, 1 a.m. Eastern time. So that seems to be the witching hour to get your April Fool's work in. And 25 minutes later, he said, how many of y'all thought I was serious? Ha ha, April Fool's. Well, probably everybody, actually, because most people wouldn't pull that kind of a joke on themselves. In a morbid way, that's probably makes it a pretty funny April Fool's joke. And other people are going to be offended because, you know, he's making light of a situation that involves drunk driving. I get it. And if you want to feel that way, feel that way. Tony, you told me yesterday you didn't watch Better Call Saul on Monday night because you watched a Bieber roast, right?
I did. I watched Bieber get roasted.
I watched it last night. It was on demand. And so I watched the entire 2 hours of it. And Pete Davidson.
He was good.
He was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that, truthfully, his father had died in the 9/11 attacks. His dad was in the World Trade Center.
Yeah, it got a little dark there for a moment.
True story,
yeah.
Okay? And they are going to that material.
Well, he went to it first.
He did go to it first, but, I mean, it, you know, Snoop Dogg. Oh, I don't even want to repeat what was said, because somebody's going to get seriously offended by
it. The Soul Plane 9/11 joke, like, I was like, now it's a roast. Like, when he was the first one up there who did a Soul Plane 9/11 joke involving his own father who did pass away in that tragic event, I was like, oh, this is where this thing is going.
They went to ISIS last night and beheading videos and all this. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I think Kevin Hart was legitimately freaked out. When it went to ISIS, I think he was really going, wait a minute.
Right, like, whoa, this, I can't really come up here and react to that in a funny way. But, I mean, it got dark in a hurry with that. But that's kind of the nature of a roast, man. My wife hates those things. Absolutely hates those kind of things. You won't watch them. I watched every second
of
them. I thought Martha Stewart killed it.
She
I
was
really
so good.
Did.
Those sly looks, you know, because they're reading the teleprompter with whatever script they've written.
Sure.
And those little looks she would give every now and then, like, yeah, I really am about to say what I'm about to say. You know, because she would kind of pause
right.
And you'd be like, how nasty is the next one going to be?
Wow.
And it would, they just topped
each other. I mean,
that
was nasty. Nasty, nasty.
Unreal.
So if that's not your cup of tea, don't watch it. If it is, go watch it because I thought it was pretty
amusing.
And
who cares if it's Bieber? Like, the fact that it was Bieber doesn't matter.
Didn't really matter.
You don't need anybody to roast.
Most of the roast is they spend more time ripping everybody else on the
right.
panel than they do, and then they spend 30 seconds on Bieber, and then, you know, a few of them are like, thank you for having me. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity to be up on this stage.
Yeah.
This audience.
Like,
they're,
Hannibal.
They're sucking up to him.
Yeah, Hannibal Buress, when he was just, I don't like your music, man. Like, I really don't like your music.
No, I'm serious. My mom doesn't like your music. My mom thinks your music is bad, too. And, it was pretty good.
And
he goes, mostly, you know, people, you bring your friends in here and everybody has a good time. He goes, nah, for me, I don't really like you, but, I thought it was a good opportunity to get my name out there. And I don't know if he was being, I think he's probably being 90% serious on that score. Today, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, Tony, going along sort of with the theme. Today, and who knows, we've gotten some interesting responses on this already, but of the players that have been mocked to the Jaguars in various mock drafts with the third overall pick, a lot of reading comprehension difficulties with this one already this morning, or people are just trolling, which is quite possible as well. Which player that has been mocked to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and if you're, into the whole draft scene, you know who those players are, would be the most foolish selection for the Jags to make at that point. We'll run through what we think, try to put together what the comprehensive list of players based on what we've seen in the various mock drafts out there and talk about that a little bit. Florida State's Pro Day, have some reaction to that coming up. Try to catch up with Johnny O a little bit later on the show. Looking for him this morning. Where you at, Johnny O? He was out in Tallahassee yesterday. Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com coming up in about 25 minutes. Going to spend some time with us talking about what else, but the NFL draft coming up and his player rankings. Wait till you see who he's got inside his top five. We'll get into that coming up today. If you'd like to get on board, you can tweet the show at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. You can call the show at 641-1010. Choose to believe or not believe anything you hear for the next hour and 45 minutes. That's on you. You have been warned. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. That part's true. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Wednesdays on Jaguars Today brought to you by Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs in home, commercial, industrial, septic systems, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter, the solution for you with same day service, weekends included. They've got the right people and the right equipment and been serving Jacksonville since 1978, serving St. Augustine and the surrounding areas as well. MetroRooter.com, the website, 695-1911. For Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today, Tony, I wanted to look up just some of the best April Fool's pranks of all time. Have you ever pulled a good one? I mean, a really good, like, I told you I did the thing. I don't do much on the air, as far as that goes, because people get a little twisted about it.
They
you know,
really do.
Just, the Donovan Darius thing just kind of came up, kind of organically, but I was a kid, like, I once put, I threw away like the sugar or dumped it out and put salt in the sugar bowl, you know, and oh, that's great, you know, and then, but then you're a kid, you're like, do you want some sugar?
You're
like, you can't just sit there and let it happen. And that probably ruined it.
Yeah, you gotta be a little more subtle than that.
I don't know if I ever did, the unscrew the salt shaker cap too.
I've done it like in public places.
Have you? Randomly?
When
like
I left
October
the restaurant.
October 3rd?
Yeah, when I left the restaurant or something when I was young and stupid. I've done that kind of thing. I don't know. I'd have to think about what the best prank is.
I read this in a magazine back in high school. I can't remember. It was like Popular Science or something. I'm not sure what the magazine was. All right. Where they had a list of like the top 10 college pranks of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I forget the university, it might have been Arizona State, or somewhere out in the Southwest, I believe. They're really not important, but that this guy goes away for the weekend, and somehow, maybe it was like more like MIT, where the brainiacs go. I can't remember. But they got some kind of lacquer, and they painted over everything in this guy's room. Mm-hmm. Everything. I mean, the desk, the objects on the desk, everything was lacquered over, and they somehow filled the room with water and put a live shark in the guy's room. And they had like a plexi, like the guy opened the door, and there was like a plexiglass thing. I mean, think about it. This is quite a project. This is a big undertaking.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, that's
it takes a lot of planning, yeah. Right, and all this stuff. And that's why it was the number one greatest prank of all time, allegedly. I should Google it and see
if
I can find it.
If that really happened, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? It seems like an urban legend,
yeah,
right?
That's crazy.
And like the guy opens the door, and I don't know if they'd removed the handle from the inside or what they did, but there's a plexiglass thing, and there's a shark swimming around in his room. Now, I don't know. They must have put seawater in there. I can't remember all
that's
the details.
Good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean, that's phenomenal.
Good. I mean, I'm thinking about some of the large-scale stuff I've done. I had some friends who still aren't sure who was in on this with me. They know I was involved, but they don't know who else was in on it with me, and they may be listening, so I'm not going to mention anyone else who may have been in on the prank because we're still enjoying the witch hunt. I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. But basically, they got married. They were off on their honeymoon, and I went to one of their parents to get a spare key for their apartment. And what we did was we filled their bathroom to the roof with balloons.
Like, oh, you told me that. Yeah.
With inflated balloons. Now, the idea behind that was we were going to do a bedroom or something. And I was like, no. Bathroom. I was like, bathroom. Because they're going to be on a cruise or whatever. And by the time they get home, one of the two of them's really going to want to go. And if we have the bathroom filled with balloons, they can't. Like, they'll have to fight through all this to get to it. And sure enough, one of them, when they got home, was desperately in need of that bath. It almost turned into an emergency. They said their apartment smelled like latex and balloons for 3 weeks after that. It was a pretty good one.
So how do you get, I could see you throw a bunch of them in there, but don't they eventually start falling out of the door?
Someone was standing there, like, holding it. Like, one of us would stand there.
Oh, like holding the wall of balloons.
Hold the
back.
Wall of balloons
I gotcha.
Up. And I actually have pictures still of me standing in that thing. It was, it took hours to
I guess
pull
so.
That thing off.
That seems like a lot of work and way too much expense, you know?
No, it's just balloons.
Ah, it was a lot of balloons.
It's just balloons.
How many packs of balloons you got to buy?
It was a bunch.
I would think hundreds of dollars of balloons.
No. I mean, because you fill them up, we had probably 5 or 6 bags of balloons, got the job done.
Get out of here. 5 or 6 bags. How many balloons in a bag?
We blew them up big, boy.
All right.
The ones that we could. We got them as big as we could.
I'm going way into detail on this.
Yeah.
I believe you because you've got the evidence of it. Anyway, so I Googled greatest April Fool's pranks of all time. Of course, these were, so I came across a story that said the greatest corporate pranks, the companies that pulled April Fool's jokes. The oldest one they had was going back to 1955, where Contra Polar Energy, Popular Electronics, ran an article about a new type of energy that basically, if you ran that instead of, you know, alternating or direct current or whatever, that it would reverse the purpose of whatever electronic device, like a light bulb would cast darkness. It's so stupid, but people bought it. The Swiss spaghetti harvest. The BBC announced that thanks to a mild winter and the virtual elimination of the dreaded spaghetti weevil, Swiss farmers were enjoying a bumper spaghetti crop, and people would call up and ask where they can get a spaghetti tree, stuff like that. Some of these were incredibly dumb. You might have thought those were incredibly dumb, but I tweeted out a link to the Sid Finch story, which is still, I think.
So good.
So good. 1985, Sports Illustrated ran the Sid Finch story. A guy was named Siddhartha Finch. He could throw it 168 miles an hour. He pitched with one work boot on and a bare foot on the other foot.
Mm-hmm.
And the opening paragraph read,
he had a trumpet solo.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing, right? The opening paragraph read, he's a pitcher, part yogi, part recluse, impressively liberated from our opulent lifestyle. Sid's deciding about yoga and his future in baseball. And if you took the first letter of every word in there, it said, Happy April Fool's Day. But people bought that hook, line, and sinker, at least for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones, Taco Bell in 1996 announced the purchase of the Liberty Bell. and would be known as the Taco Liberty Bell. That's pretty good, actually. Virgin Cola announced that they had a new technology that when soft drinks went bad, it would turn the can blue. And Pepsi had just gone to blue cans, and so they warned consumers not to drink any soft drink that was in a blue can. That's not too bad. Burger King in 1998 announced the invention of the left-handed hamburger. And, you know, that where everything, the condiments were rotated 180 degrees, thereby redistributing the weight of the sandwich so the bulk of them skew to the left. So
me and a friend once did convince a girl that there were left and right socks. We did actually have someone convinced there were
some socks do have left and right, though.
Hers didn't.
All right.
We got her.
All right. What else? Twitter. I don't remember this. In 2013 announced that it now had a two-tiered. They're going to have a free Twitter and a pay Twitter. But the free one was called TWTTR, and you could not use vowels. You just could only tweet with consonants on it. You had to pay $5 a month.
The brain will actually fill in vowels.
Like, the brain fills in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but they've done those studies. If you have sentences that you have the proper spacing or whatever between words, but you just take out all the vowels, the brain will automatically fill those letters in.
I like to think that the brain fills in the gaps between me doing the show that people think there's actually some substance to the conversation going on here. Let's go to the phone, 641-1010. I want to get to who we think is the list of players that we're narrowing it down to when we talk about the players that have been mock drafted to the Jaguars with the third pick. But I think Rick is on the line with an April Fool's prank story. So let's welcome him to Jaguars Today. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Hey, guys. Hey, just real quick. We used to work with a not-so-great guy when we were building golf courses back in the day. And he drove a little Fiat X19. I don't know if you remember them, but they're little tiny two-seater cars. So while he was out to lunch one day, us and the rest of the guys at work picked it up and wedged it between two trees. So the front bumper was against one tree and the back bumper was against another and left for the day.
What did he do? I assume he had to cut down the trees to get it out, right?
Well, actually, he actually had to apologize for his behavior to everybody, and we picked it up and moved it out of there the next day.
Oh, you picked it up and moved him.
But that either cut down a
That's
tree or
good.
Have people pick it up. But that was he left us alone after that.
That's a pretty good one, Rick. All right, thank you, buddy.
Have you ever moved someone's car?
Have I ever moved someone's car? I left pickles in Denise Langrick's car when we had a little prank war going on in high school. She found him about a week later. Wasn't pleased with it. Hi, Denise, if you're out there.
I'm sure she wasn't.
No, she wasn't. Actually, we got flowers sent to us in, I can't remember what class it was. We're seniors in high school, and it was like a guys versus girls prank war going on. Mm-hmm. And they sent us flowers that said, roses are red, pickles are green, paybacks are hell, if you know what I mean. And so basically, and then they never did anything. But that was the best prank of all, because we were just waiting for the... You know, the axe
just
to pull.
Just do it already.
All right, get it over with. All right, Tony, a list of players that have been mocked to the Jags. All right, some of them are easy. Obviously, Leonard Williams frequently mock drafted to the Jaguars, presuming the two quarterbacks come off the board first. Dante Fowler is everywhere. You see him mocked to the Jags. I've seen, you know, some older mocks. We saw Randy Gregory and Shane Ray in there, right? A couple of pass rushers. Vic Beasley, I've seen in at least one mock draft.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody reminded me, somebody said any offensive lineman. I do believe it was Doug Ferrara of Sports Illustrated who mock drafted Brandon Scherff, the Iowa lineman, to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Who am I missing here? Amari Cooper has been mocked to the Jags. I can't recall seeing a Kevin White, the wide receiver from West Virginia. Do you recall off the top of your head seeing Kevin White paired up with the Jaguars?
I don't.
See, to me, that kind of... He may turn out to be better than Amari Cooper. I don't know, right? I mean, we all have our opinion on it. I would take Cooper because he's got a bigger track record against better competition week in, week out. Although, you know, for instance, White did very well against Alabama, which, you know, had as good a defense probably as anybody that Cooper faced in his time at Bama. But that's the kind of pick, again, I use the phrase all the time, that I think a lot of people would lose their mind over. Like, can you imagine, you know, like there may be people that if the Jags, let's say the Jags traded with Cleveland, got the 12th and the 19th pick, right? And they got a pass rusher with the 12th pick, whatever. And then they come along, and all the running backs are on the board, and they took Melvin Gordon, okay? Maybe that's the right pick, but there would be a contingent of people that would say, it's not Todd Gurley. What are you doing, right? Then they go crazy. The same thing. If Kevin White were the selection by the Jaguars at number three, could you imagine the uproar? Now, you know, there's going to be some diehard true believers that no matter what Dave Caldwell does, it's going to be the right move until proven otherwise. But what else? Anybody else you can think of that you've seen mocked to the Jacksonville? Am I missing anyone glaring here? Bud Dupree, right? Mocked to the Jags at least once.
Yeah.
That I can, and even in a straight scenario, I know Prisco's latest mock draft had him trading down and taking Bud Dupree. I think there was one on Sporting News, because I remember Hacker bringing it up on XL Primetime that Bud Dupree was mocked to the Jags at number three. I think you see the guy, listen to the guy who called in right at the end of the drill this morning. This has nothing to do necessarily with the mock draft scenario, but his point was, if you're unsure if Blake Bortles is a franchise quarterback, why wouldn't you take Marcus Mariota with the third pick? I thought Hicken was spot on. I was just waiting for one of those guys to say, I thought Hicken was spot on. Doesn't matter what we think. We don't know if he's a franchise guy or not. There's no, you can't prove that he is until he becomes it. But the Jags feel he's going to be, right? The Jags feel that he gave them everything they expected in his rookie season. In fact, probably more because they didn't expect him to play in his rookie season, or at least hope that it would go that way.
Right.
There's no way in hell this team would select and nor would I advocate for that kind of thing to go down.
No. Quarterback should not be considered for the Jags until we get to day three, and probably late on day three if they want to think about drafting a prospect as a guy that they may be able to develop. That's the first time that quarterback should be a consideration for the Jacksonville Jaguars, in my opinion, in this draft, with the needs they still have in this roster.
I don't think they'll take one, period.
I don't think they will either, but if they took one late, I'd be okay with it. At three, that's crazy talk. Look, they drafted a guy last year to be their franchise quarterback. To even consider drafting another guy right now, they told you when they drafted Bortles it was because they thought that he was the best prospect in these two drafts.
Right, that they graded the guys this year and thought if he returned to UCF, that he would be the top guy on their board.
Right.
Right, and he took a normal progression along the way. And you can argue, well, you don't always take that normal progression, right? Jameis Winston didn't play as well this year. He played worse this year. Certainly turned it over a lot more. So
I don't see them directing or drafting a direct replacement for Luke Jokel, who's going into his third year. And I think I have a lot more questions about whether Luke Jokel is going to work out at this point than I do Blake Bortles. But I don't see that step being taken by this.
Correct. But to be fair, the caller's point was it's clearly the most important position. Offensive tackle is important. It's not nearly as important as the quarterback position, right? I mean, you can't name all the left tackles that the great quarterbacks have around the National Football League off the top of your head. Let's get Dwayne in here real quick. He's got an April Fool's prank story. We got Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com coming up in a few minutes. Dwayne, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, man.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
My son's in school in New York, and last year he had someone call me and say that he was arrested. And that we needed to get to New York to take care of his situation. I want to say they said he raped somebody or something. And after my wife and I are panicking, we're both on the phone, and then I could hear the kids in the background laughing. Like I was, if I would have been right there on him right then, I would have choked.
You know what, Dwayne, thank you for the call. There are certain things, again, what's off limits? I guess it depends on the person, right? Again, watch the Bieber roast. Apparently nothing's off limits.
If you know what the person can take, it's a different thing.
That I know, and I don't know if this is an April Fool thing or not, but this is vaguely just popped maybe some suppressed memory in my mind. My mom's passed away. This may have precipitated her demise at some point, but I seem to recall in high school doing something similar like that. Like, I can't remember if I was like supposedly injured or mom, don't get mad. I need you to come down to the police station. I may have done something similar to that without getting into the details. Certainly didn't make myself a sexual predator.
No.
At least I hope. I was dumb enough that I'm not going to put anything past me back in the day. And really, let's be frank, I haven't matured all that much in that time.
I can't remember my parents ever being the target of my pranks.
I was
friends, sure. Parents, yeah, not really.
I'm sure my mom, God rest her soul, most gullible woman you'll ever be in your life, Tony. I mean, in your life. Mom, I'm going to be on the presidential ticket. I'm going to be running with Ross Perot, okay? The two of us. I'm going to be his vice president. Wow, that's amazing. Didn't know you were up for that. Love you, Mom. All right, that does it for this nonsense. More nonsense coming up. Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com. We'll talk about his rankings and who he thinks would be smart or foolish for the Jaguars to select at number 3 and beyond. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, it is Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Wow, the memories, Tony.
It's all coming back.
Wait a minute. We did a lot more stupid stuff than we just let on back in the day in terms of pranks. I don't even necessarily want to tell you how far we took it with my friend Tim Crevé the one time. Oh, my goodness. Man, the layers of deception.
See, even if that, like, everything you described there had been done to me, like, if I was the target of that prank, I'd be telling that story to everyone I could for years.
All right.
For years.
We got Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com. Maybe in about 35 minutes, we got a few minutes. I'll give you the basic bare bones outline of what was just a... I mean, this was one that was set up over months and months and months. So
that's good.
Happy April Fool's Day, everyone. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. That is the absolute truth. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday, and we're joined here on Jaguars today by Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com. Good morning, Scott. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
April Fool's Day, the entire draft process is April Fool's Day for some GMs, isn't it, right? I mean, there's just, we're in that season now where nobody really wants to let you know what their true intentions are. And while we all believe that the Buccaneers are enamored with Jameis Winston, he's likely overall number one pick, I think Marcus Mariota, a little more across the board, Scott. What's your opinion of him, and what do you think ultimately happens? Do you think that whether it's Tennessee or someone else, he ultimately comes off the board with the second pick in the draft?
Well, it's definitely getting to be that time of the year where you shouldn't believe a whole lot that comes out of the mouths of NFL decision makers, coaches, etc. I kind of call it silly season, and I don't blame the teams. It's part of the game. And concealing your intentions absolutely does have value. As far as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers go, if they truly are comfortable with Jameis Winston off the field, then I think it's a really easy decision. You go with Jameis Winston, the quarterback from Florida State, because I think he's a far superior prospect to Mariota in terms of how his game translates on the field. Now, there's some questions about his maturity off the field, but between the lines, Jameis Winston is as close to a sure thing as we've seen probably since Andrew Luck. And honestly, if it weren't for the character concerns, Jameis Winston would be the third best quarterback prospect I've seen behind only Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning. Granted, it would be a distant third, but still, that's pretty rarefied air. And if he can keep his nose clean off the field, he's going to be the rarest of commodities, which is a true franchise quarterback. So I think teams are going to be willing to overlook a lot when it comes to Winston, and I think he's going to be the number one overall pick. But he's a transcendent player, and the ironic thing is, for as much of a knucklehead as he can be off the field at times, on the field, he is the consummate field general. He has all of those intangible qualities you look for in the leader of your football team. So I think Winston's going to go number one, and then the big question is Marcus Mariota from Oregon. How far does he fall? He could go number two to the Tennessee Titans, and I think the Titans should go that direction. I always say the golden rule of the NFL draft is, unless you already have a franchise quarterback, you don't pass on one. But I just wonder if Ken Wisenhunt might have more of the short-term view in mind and stick with the devil he knows and Zach Mettenberger and kind of try to save his job this upcoming season rather than start all over at the game's most important position. So I wouldn't agree with that if they did pass on Mariota, but if they do, he could slide a little bit, because we know Jacksonville's not taking him at 3. We know Oakland's not taking him at 4. So barring somebody trading up, Mariota could fall to 5 to Washington or 6 to the Jets.
Assuming that the quarterbacks do go 1-2 in this draft, though, the Jags sitting at number 3, I know Leonard Williams is your number one rated player in this draft. The Jags have put a lot of attention through free agency the last couple years and re-signing their own with Tyson Alualu and Derek Marks, Jared Audrick, a guy they signed in free agency this year, on those kind of positions where Leonard Williams would be expected to play. Is he a great enough talent that even with that being done here in Jacksonville, he should still be the pick for this team at number three?
I absolutely believe so. I think Leonard Williams, blue chip defensive lineman, and I think he's a far better player than any of the edge pass rushers in this class, which might be of greater need for Jacksonville. But a guy like Dante Fowler Jr., I think, is a pretty big step down from Leonard Williams. So I think you take the best player available in that case, and you grab the guy that looks like a true blue chip impact defensive lineman. Now, Leonard Williams isn't quite as flashy as a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, but he is one heck of a football player, and he's been compared to Richard Seymour, and if they can get that type of player, that should be a no-brainer for the Jaguars. But if Leonard Williams goes number two to the Titans, which is a distinct possibility, then I think the Jaguars are going to focus in on Dante Fowler Jr. from Florida, who kind of emerged as the top edge pass rusher in this draft from a group of guys that also include Vic Beasley from Clemson, Bud Dupree from Kentucky, even throw Randy Gregory from Nebraska and Shane Ray from Missouri into that mix, although they're dropping a little bit right now. And Dante Fowler Jr., I'm not as big a fan of him as a lot of people. Now, physically, he absolutely looks the part, and he's a really good all-around player. My issue with Dante Fowler is I just don't know that I see him as a difference maker. And if the number three overall pick, I want to find a guy who's going to be a difference maker. And the guy I compare Dante Fowler to is Derek Morgan for the Tennessee Titans, who was a top 15 overall pick, has had a nice career, but not necessarily a game changer. So that would be my only concern with Dante Fowler Jr. is the value at number three overall. But who knows? If Mariota's there, maybe a team like the Cleveland Browns would be willing to pay the price to move up, and Jacksonville could get a pass rusher a little later. So I think Jacksonville's in a pretty good position there at number three, where they're not necessarily locked into having to do any one thing. And because they don't need a quarterback, that's going to give them options, because I think we're going to see teams jockeying a little bit for Marcus Mariota, because this quarterback class, after Winston Mariota, it drops off a cliff. And if you don't get one of those two guys, there's a really good chance you're not getting a starting quarterback in this draft. So once when one of them's off the board, the other one's going to become an extremely valuable commodity.
Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com, here with us on Jaguars today on 1010XL. Scott, a difference maker. Tony and I talk about this. If Todd Gurley had not gotten hurt, we think the clamoring for him to go third overall from some in the area would have been pretty strong. You still rank him as your number four overall prospect in this draft. And I'm smitten with the guy, not at the third spot, but a little bit later on, you know, in a trade back scenario, or even trading up if he's hanging around late in round one. But in your opinion, with that ACL, and we've seen a track record of guys come back from it, others have struggled, how high do you think he will go in this draft?
Well, Todd Gurley is a pretty special player, and the fact that as a running back, a position that's been devalued as of late, coming off a major knee injury, he's still considered to be a surefire first-round pick, really speaks volumes about the type of talent he is. Only concern with Todd Gurley is the durability, and it's not just this most recent knee injury. He had some other ailments that he was kind of nicked up throughout his college career, but if he can stay healthy, he has the ability to be one of the top five running backs in the entire NFL. You hear him compared to Marshawn Lynch, and I don't think that's out of line at all. So when I was doing my overall rankings, I couldn't help but put him at number four overall. Now, philosophically, I would never take a running back this early. I'm just of the opinion that you can get productive runners well beyond the first round. But if there is anybody that's going to tempt you, it's a guy like Gurley. And I think he's still going to go somewhere in the top 20. I'm actually working on a new mock draft right now, and I kind of have him penciled in at number 18 to the San Diego Chargers. I think that would be a good fit for him. But Todd Gurley, and even to a slightly lesser extent, Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin, they're going to be a litmus test for what is the value of a stud running back in today's NFL draft, because after going 50 years in a row without at least one running back in the first round, we've got 2 years in a row with none. But part of that's been a product of teams just not willing to invest in the position, and part of it's been there just hasn't been an elite talent like that. Well, this year, We have one, if not two of them. So teams are going to have to kind of put their money where their mouth is. And there's depth at running back, too. I think you're going to be able to get a really good running back round three, round four, round five. So it's going to be very interesting. But I think Gurley might end up going a little earlier than some expect. Maybe possibly somewhere in the top 15 overall. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Depending on the mock drafts that you're looking at, I've seen the Raiders at four bounce back and forth between Kevin White and Amari Cooper because of that need to get a prolific pass catcher in that offense for Derek Carr. You have Kevin White ahead of Amari Cooper. It's just one spot, 6 and 7 on your list of the top 32 prospects for this draft, but you're one of the few guys I've actually seen rate Kevin White ahead of Amari Cooper. Why do you have him in front of him?
It's really close. Like you said, my overall ranks, I had him back-to-back, and it's kind of 6 of 1, half a dozen of another. It might just come down to what type of player are you looking for. And I gave the slight edge to White just because he's a little more impressive of a physical specimen from a size-speed perspective, but Amari Cooper's no slouch either, and Cooper is extremely polished. You hear him getting compared to people like Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. Just outstanding route runner, does all of the little things. So I think you can make a strong case for either White or Cooper being the top pass catcher in this class, and I think both are going to be gone somewhere in the top 12 to 13 overall, maybe in the top 7 overall. But I think everyone kind of looks at the Oakland Raiders, and that's the logical pick for them, either Cooper or White. They desperately need a playmaker for that offense, a weapon for their young quarterback, Derek Carr, and they should have the pick of the litter there at number 4. It's just a matter of, do they prefer the polish of Cooper or the potential physical dominance of White? But either way, they can't go wrong. It's going to be a huge upgrade for them. And they're another team. They could move down a half a dozen spots and still get one of those receivers. So if somebody wants to trade up, I think the Oakland Raiders are going to be open for business because they certainly still have a lot of holes to fill, and they could still get that pass catcher a little later. But both Cooper and White are outstanding players. And don't sleep on Devontae Parker from Louisville either. He doesn't get mentioned very often, but he's right behind those two guys, and he's not going to come up. He's going to come off the board not too long after those two. I think his floor might be the Miami Dolphins at 14. So we're going to see three wideouts in the top half of the first round, and that's where it's going to get interesting. Who's going to be the fourth wide receiver off the board, and where? And I think Rashad Perriman from Central Florida has made a real strong case for himself. Dorial Green-Beckham from Oklahoma would probably be a top 10 to 15 overall pick for sure if he didn't have character concerns. There's no telling how far he could slide. I wouldn't be shocked if Dorial Green-Beckham went in the top 20. I wouldn't be surprised if he slipped to the late round two and everything in between. It's just going to come down to beauty in the eye of the beholder on that one. So it's going to be fun to see what happens at the wide receiver position, but we know we're going to have at least 3 and maybe as many as 5 or 6 pass catchers in the first round this year.
I've heard different ranges on this, but I've heard somewhere like 8 or 9 really high-end prospects in this draft. I've heard some people saying that they feel like there's maybe 16 to 20 real first-round grades in this draft class. Given those kind of numbers, how much flexibility do you think teams that are in the top 5 like Jacksonville are going to have as far as trading down and where they're going to target to trade down and stay in that first round?
Yeah, I think there are drop-offs. I think the first tier would be Leonard Williams, Jameis Winston. Then I think there's a drop-off. And then I think probably throw another half a dozen guys into the mix for the next spots. And then there's another drop-off, and there's not a whole lot of difference between a late first-round pick and an early to mid-second rounder this year. It might just come down to each individual team, the type of scheme they run, their needs, what they're looking for. So I think a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, the one big chip they're going to have, hopefully, is Mariota still being on the board. I think that's the one guy at the top of this draft that's going to invite trade offers. The other thing for the Jaguars to watch out for is, with everybody kind of zeroing in on wide receiver for Oakland at number 4, if there's a team out there that says, we got to have Kevin White, or we got to have Amari Cooper specifically, maybe the Chicago Bears at 7, maybe they'd want to move up and get ahead of Oakland and get their top pass catcher. So I think Jacksonville's in a pretty good spot there at number 3 overall to just wait and see what happens in front of them. And like I said, if Leonard Williams falls into their laps, happy day, turn in the card. You just got a blue-chip defensive lineman, which is a pretty valuable commodity. If not, I think you're going to have your pick of all the pass rushers if you want to go that direction, and you're going to have some trade opportunities if you want to do that as well. So I think Jacksonville's pretty well positioned there at number three, but I think the value and the potential trade options go up exponentially if Mariota is still on the board.
All right, we'll find out a month from tomorrow, round one of the NFL draft. 4 weeks from tomorrow, I should say, is when the NFL draft gets underway in Chicago, with or without Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota present. Scott Wright, DraftCountdown.com. Scott, enjoyed it as always. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
It was my pleasure. Anytime.
All right, there he goes, Scott Wright. Check him out, by the way, on the Twitter, at Draft Countdown as well. Coming up next, we've got this date in football history. Got the Honda drive around the NFL. Johnny O is going to pop in a little bit later on, tell us what he saw from Jameis Winston. But not only Jameis Winston, what about the offensive and defensive line prospects at Florida State's Pro Day yesterday? Jags sent Todd Wash and Doug Marrone, their defensive and offensive line coaches, respectively, out to Tallahassee to take in the show. What did they see? We'll get all that coming your way on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Happy birthday, Joel Schmingy! Jacksonville Jaguar Joel Schmenge. April Fool's birthday, born in 1968. So Schmenge would be, what, 47 years young. Happy birthday to Joel. Also, Jumbo Elliott, born on this date in 1965. And this date, April 1st, 1977, the NFL decided to experiment with a seventh official in some preseason games. They now employ seven officials for every game. And in 1992, the NFL was debating, Tony, whether to play 16 games in 18 weeks with a double bye and opted to stay with the 17-week schedule. So I guess they basically did nothing, no change, but they opted to not make that change to the double bye, which would have really screwed up fantasy owners across the board. Would have made team management a lot more difficult.
Sure.
And we thank them for that. All right, so that is this date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Here on Gate Parkway in Jacksonville, if you need a family dentist, if you need cosmetic work done, if you or a loved one particularly needs the Somnimed Stop Snoring Custom Fit Mouth Guard, you've got to call Dr. McCall at 620-9225, also a certified Invisalign provider. Visit jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Dallas Cowboys have re-signed linebacker Rolando McClain to a one-year deal with a $3 million base salary, another $1 million potentially available in incentives for McClain. The Chicago Bears signed running back Jaquizz Rodgers to a one-year deal. The Baltimore Ravens have signed free agent quarterback Matt Schaub to a one-year deal as well. Greg Jennings, he's still not signed anywhere. The Montreal Alouettes of the CFL are trying to sign defensive end Michael Sam to play for them this season. According to the Alouettes general manager Jim Popp, the team has a 50-50 chance, in his estimation, to sign Sam for the upcoming year. So maybe not the NFL and Michael Sam's future, but the CFL is still a possibility.
Now, Michael Sam, was it last week, I believe, came out and said, I'm not the only gay person in the NFL, only homosexual player in the NFL. Well, you're right, because you're not in the NFL. Okay? I mean, you're not any of the gay people in the NFL right now, just because you want to be. Hey, whatever. He said a bunch of, you know, guys are a bunch. I don't know. I don't want to mischaracterize what he said. But some players, including some high-profile players, reached out to him and said, hey, you know, I wish I had the guts to do what you did. And he's, you know, hey, that's their prerogative. Do what you want. Live your life, man. Don't hurt other people. And on we go. But Michael Sam, so it's 50-50 then, you're saying, whether Michael Sam plays football this year. It appears to be the case.
That sounds about right, yeah.
It's, you know, look, he's too slow, right? I mean, for...
We talked about it when he was coming into the draft last year. This is a guy without a position. When he came out, right, and people were saying, well, he dropped from a fourth to a sixth, seventh round prospect. I was like, there's not a whole lot of difference there for a guy who's really got no position in the NFL. He's too big to play linebacker. He's too small to play defensive end. He can't run. What's he going to do for an NFL team? I mean, it was just the whole time the questions were there with that particular player for him to have the courage to come out and be the first one that openly was gay going into the NFL. Good for that guy. That doesn't mean that he can play NFL football.
No. And he said, too, something along the lines of he was surprised it was such a big deal. Really? Were you that surprised? I mean, that
Come
seems
on,
a little crazy, but whatever the case.
By the way, it is also Sean Taylor was born on this date, 1983.
Well, my sources did not indicate that, Tony Smith, and unless you're pulling a very subtle and pointless prank on me.
This is on Pro Football Reference, but 24 years old today.
Well, there you go. Does Pro Football Reference just have a listing of birthdays, of April 1st birthdays? Or how did you come across this?
No, I saw it on Twitter. I saw he was trending on Twitter, and I was like, I want to go somewhere and make sure. You know, on a day like today, but yeah, Sean Taylor, rest in peace.
I saw this little blurb on Roto-World from the ESPN Bucks reporter Pat Jasinskis. I didn't know he was covering the Bucks now. He was with the Panthers for a long time, wasn't he? Covered the Panthers, Charlotte Observer, then with ESPN. Anyway, he said he believes Doug Martin, the running back, could be had for a mid-round draft pick. Good luck. I mean, Doug Martin, when he burst into the league, Tony, had those two games back-to-back. Remember that? They were back-to-back weeks. They were monster games.
Oh, yeah.
Well over 200 yards in the one game, at least. I think both of them were over 200 yards, if I'm not mistaken. But, look, he's 26 years old. He's had injuries. Why wouldn't you just take, I don't know, T.J. Yeldon or any number of guys that you can get in the mid-rounds, whatever you consider the mid-round, say third to fifth round, rather than a guy that's got the wear and tear on his body like that? I can't see much being given up for Doug Martin, if anything at all, as far as that goes, if the report's even accurate. That's his belief.
Maybe a sixth, seventh round pick, like maybe once you're getting past all those running backs.
Right, maybe when they all come off the board. Maybe you've got eight guys that you like. And if it lines up where you could grab one, fine. If not, all right, we'll offer you a sixth-round pick, something like that. I'm not saying the Jags. I'm just saying in general, as far as that goes. I can't see. Look, Dave Caldwell is not enamored with players with injury histories. He's not. And which makes me wonder. I really, sometime post-draft, like to sit down with him. Because right now, I would expect Dave Caldwell to not give me the facts. They're not going to necessarily lie to you. They're just not going to tell you everything they think about these guys. But Todd Gurley, how do you really feel about Todd Gurley? Had a conversation with Dave in London about Todd Gurley. We're just shooting the breeze, and just brought up Gurley. What do you think about Gurley? And he said, honestly, at that point, this pre-injury, and I've mentioned this a few times, said, I really got to watch more tape. He goes, because I tell you what, it looks like he runs behind through a lot of big holes. Mm-hmm. Georgia's offensive line. You got Nick Chubb, who picked up right where he left off.
Sure.
For all we know, Dave Caldwell thinks talk of Todd Gurley being a first-round pick is silly talk. I don't know. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth. I'm saying Dave Caldwell proved to be a bit of an enigma last year with the selection of Blake Bortles, and that's the way you want your GM to be. You want him to keep you guessing.
Sure.
And hopefully pick the right guy, but not telegraph your intentions and let other teams take advantage of that information.
Yeah, I think I may have misspoke too.
Here we go.
The Sean Taylor thing. No,
just say April Fool's.
No, he would be 32 today. He died at age 24. I think I said 24 and was thinking 32. But he died at age 24, would be 32 years old today.
Oh, you said he died at age 32?
I said he would be 24 today.
Oh, is that what you said? Okay, that went
right
over my
head. But I was thinking 32 because that's how old he was, but he died at age 24. So
I got you. That part went right over my head. As far as that goes. All right, here we go. Coming up next, we've got Mr. Osier stopping by. Johnny O was out in Tallahassee yesterday for Florida State's Pro Day. We'll get his reaction to what went down, and I'll see if I can encapsulate the awful prank we were in the midst of pulling in high school that never came to fruition. But you'll probably think much worse of my whole group of people that I associated with at the time.
Some pranks can they walk that line of danger.
Boy,
you don't know how people are going to react.
Right. And that's where this one kind of was headed. So all that and more, all that fun stuff coming up. 64110, if you want to pop on board, the Twitter handles, MD_1010XL, 1010XL Fat Tony, 1010XL Tyler. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, happy April Fool's Day, Jaguars today, a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Quick capsule, we'll let you know how deviant and bad we were in high school. We'll welcome in Johnny O. Okay, long story short, we pranked each other a lot in high school. Right?
I'm so disturbed by
this is bad, right? This is really, really bad. My friend Phil was in the midst of it. He was the instigator on so many levels. And so he had come up with this plan with this guy, Tim. We thought Tim was going to be the victim of the prank, but Tim was in on the double cross prank. And whatever, I forget what we were going to do to him that was going to cause him so much distress that he was going to pretend to kill himself. Okay, and we were going to have to. Now we didn't know this.
Oh, that's
I didn't
hilarious.
Know this. It's not hilarious, right? I know it's not. And we were going to have to find him. And Phil was going to be with us. And Phil and Tim were really tight. And whatever I had done, the belief would have been that I had caused the distress that he had that reaction. Phil was going to go to his car, get a gun out that he had filled with blanks.
This gets funnier all the time.
And go and turn on us like you killed him. Now I'm going to kill you and fire on us with a blank gun, which probably would have precipitated a heart attack. And
I have to ask you.
You'd be hosting Jaguars
Day. Didn't, well, it seems like I do anyway.
Like Monday, yeah.
But I have to ask you, did common sense prevail, or did you just forget?
No, I think it probably. Or I think
the rig was just
to the
too
point.
Difficult.
Right.
It might have been, right. They couldn't build the rig. They probably got realized that, you know, this might actually cause like heart
right.
stoppage or something.
That sounds like
that.
An awful mid '90s teen movie.
We were so bad, and this was mid '80s teen
Honestly,
movie, but it was we're not good.
Right. If you had been at the point where you had cameras that you could use on your cell phone, I think it would have been done.
It may have been.
I think like that may have been what pushed you over the top. It's like we got to get this on YouTube. People
wasn't that a
will
movie
love
with
this?
Wasn't that a movie with Neve Campbell in it at some point?
Man, it was really, I mean, look, it was stupid.
He told me the story, and I was like, if that had been done to me, I would be telling people that story for the rest of my life.
Right, yeah. Right. Like, and now, keep in mind, I did not set this one up.
Right.
Okay, I was the ultimate.
As soon as I realized I wasn't
this.
Really being shot at,
if
I would have just.
Associated with people who
I would have been laughing
I would have
so
gone.
Hard.
I would have gone and cleaned my pants, and then gone on from there. So there you have it. Happy April Fool's Day, John.
Yeah, it's cool. I've got no club in the bag that matches
Ooh,
that.
Oh, boy. We're so dumb. I think that's the worst one I've got. I think. I
hope the worst
that
one
is.
You almost had, yeah.
I know. Oh, boy. All right. Let's go out. Let's flip the script. Tallahassee yesterday, Florida State Pro Day. We'll start with Jameis Winston because he's kind of the big overall story. I know it's not affecting the Jags draft plans other than he's going to go in one of the top couple picks, most likely to Tampa. What did you see from him yesterday?
Well, I think you saw what you expected to see. He is, to me anyway, clearly when you combine quarterback position with talent, with ability, with the dynamic personality, he's clearly the number one pick in the draft. I know, you know, there are analysts out there who aren't sure yet. He makes, quote-unquote, all the throws, looks the part, is the leader, whatever all those things you want. And again, it just comes back to, you know, if it's on the field between the lines, I don't see any way in the world that Tampa doesn't take him.
Was that kind of the conversation out there, too, among everyone watching it?
Yeah, I mean, when you talk to the analysts afterward, you talk to Jaws and Warner afterward, and, you know, they said the football stuff that you're hearing, which is that when he moved, he was not as accurate. When he set his feet, he was fundamentally sound. Everything was perfect. So, you know, that's what you draft a guy on. You don't, you know, at the top of the draft, if you can make all those throws and if you have the performance that he had in college and he's a prototype pro style guy, then, you know, on the field, all the boxes are checked, you know, to use draft vernacular. So I think he showed what you expected him to show. I mean, the word on him before was that when he moved, that he was not as accurate and not as good. So they moved him a lot trying to prove that point that he was better at it. He still struggled with it. So, you know, he is what he is and that's okay. I mean, most stand in the pocket quarterbacks are better when they're standing in the pocket. That's what this game is. That's what the sport entails is a guy who can win from the pocket and make throws in the pocket. And he's the best quarterback in the draft at doing that. And that's what, you know, I think most general managers ideally would prefer to have.
That Blake, one of the things that, you know, scouts liked about him was his ability to throw on the run and,
sure.
and throw accurately on the run. But you hope he doesn't have to do that as much as...
It's never ideal.
Right.
If you're setting up your long-term proposition for your offense, you know, again, there are exceptions, but most NFL teams would say, I want to protect the quarterback, I want to limit his hits as much as possible, I want to keep this guy healthy short and long term, and I want him to be able to make plays from his arm from the pocket.
John Osier, senior writer for Jaguars.com, here with us. Todd Wash, defensive line coach. Doug Marone, offensive line coach. We're in attendance yesterday for the Jags. Is that correct?
That's yes, it is.
What I was told. Okay.
And we're looking at linemen, and I wasn't looking at linemen.
Right. So. But I'm assuming, in your opinion, Florida State doesn't have a lineman defensively or offensively for that matter. It's not going to factor into the first round.
Right. Not in the first, but Cam Irving, center, makes sense because if they don't get somebody in the late stages of free agency now who can sort of be that competition, the guy who can snap, the guy who can do all those things, then he makes some sense as a guy who could come in and potentially push pretty hard for one of those spots.
But if you draft Cam Irving, you're going to have to draft him with the 36th pick if he's there, right? According to all the prognostications, that's the range.
Which I would be surprised if that's the move.
But because if it is, pretty much you're signaling that guy's going to come in for a starting spot.
But remember what they did last year. We weren't really talking about two receivers in the second round because they didn't have two second-round picks. So you never know, especially in that second round. Everybody talks about first-round trades. Second-round trade, get in. If you really like a guy, you give up a pick the next year. That's not really been Caldwell's MO to completely limit himself on numbers of picks. But if they like a guy like that, then maybe that becomes a factor in the second round.
Do you get the sense that Caldwell doesn't – like, I get the sense listening to Caldwell talk about draft over the last 2.5 years that he wants to have 8 or 9 picks every year like they did last year so they could have that maneuverability, and that this year they're going in with just the 7 picks that they have. So it makes me feel like unless they're moving back at some point in this draft, I don't get the sense that they're going to be an aggressive team moving up to get anybody.
Which if you move – I mean, like – again, we're all concentrating because it's the thing you can concentrate on. A scenario where you trade back and you get a couple first rounders this year or an extra second rounder. But once you trade back, if he was able to do that, well, then you've got more picks that we're not all talking about because we don't know what those picks are. But if he trades back and gets, 3 of some combination for that first round pick, well, then he's got a couple more that maybe he can deal back into that second round for a couple of second round picks, and you're picking 36 and 45, or, I don't know the numbers because there's no way to know the numbers. But again, mainly what you're doing at pro days is when these guys go to a school, it becomes the headline on the internet that next day. They're looking at this guy, this guy, this guy. What they want to do at pro days is make sure all the research is done. So that once April 29th rolls around, you're in your second day of the draft, and all of a sudden a scenario opens itself up where Cam Irving is on the board or where X guy is on the board, that you're not running around going, hey, Google this guy.
Right.
I mean,
what does Osier say about him?
Yeah, you want to make sure that you can turn to Jerry Sullivan or you can turn to Todd Wash and go, hey, Todd, what do you think? Well, I like this, this, and this, and this. Oh, okay, cool. And there's probably more scientific talk than okay, cool, but you want to have that feeling of, okay, we've looked, we've checked our boxes, we've done the research. That's why there's 30 pre-draft interviews. That's why they talk to every kid at the combine. That's why they go to so many pro days, is they want to make sure that if some scenario happens, there's always going to be a guy drop. There's always going to be a guy who slides 17 spots and you can't believe is there. They were surprised Allen Robinson was there last year when they were going to pick. So all of a sudden, they needed to be well-researched on that. So that, rather than get too hung up, we're looking at Wash and Marone being there because it's 3 hours away from us, and that's where I was yesterday. Jerry Sullivan was at Amari Cooper's pro day. Different head coaches are at different pro days. So it's all part of the blanket research to make sure you're prepared on draft day.
All right. A lot of people said throughout the course of the season, I got tons of tweets and emails about Nick O'Leary, right? This is pre-Julius Thomas signing, but even with that, some people were saying, hey, let's go sign one and draft Nick O'Leary. We got the future of the position because you need more than one. I'm of the opinion he's short and slow for the position. He's got great hands and was a terrific college tight end.
He's short and slow for the position. There's no question about
that.
Yes. But he's also a guy who clearly has the ability to make plays. He's a guy that if he's available in the fourth, fifth, later in the draft, you take a chance on. With Julius Thomas, is that somewhere they go in the third round of the draft when there's so many other places you can go? you would kind of doubt it.
Wouldn't think so. Assuming you watched Jameis work out, you saw these guys catching the ball. Mm-hmm. Nick O'Leary, Rashad Greene, how did they look to you?
Well, O'Leary looked hurt because he was not.
Oh, he wasn't participating yesterday.
Working,
okay.
So he looked great for a guy who was on the sideline.
Excellent.
But the receivers, again, didn't stand out to me anyway. But I was really watching Jameis so much that I was not really. I knew I was writing Jameis. I knew I was talking Jameis. So I really didn't, honestly, look in detail at the receivers enough to sit here and speak about them very intelligently.
All right. Go ahead, Tom.
No, just P.J. Williams, the other guy that really the scouts were talking about coming out yesterday. I know you said you were focusing in on mm-hmm. Jameis, but did you notice anything out of him? And what, like, besides Jameis Winston, what was the conversation about some of the prospects that were out there?
Very little besides Jameis Winston, to be honest. Right. But P.J. Williams looked good in the drills that he was doing. But again, main focus on Jameis, and most of these guys look good in a pro day. One thing you notice, whenever you read anything about pro day or talk about pro days, every player who's not a quarterback looks good at pro days unless they're overweight. Because the cone drills, all these things are set up so that a first round pick is going to look very good. And it's usually the quarterback. If you notice, I do this draft tracker, for example. And I follow every pro day everywhere. The only players who have been iffy on pro days are Mariota and Winston this year. Everybody else has looked really good at the pro day because they throw, so they're picked apart. Everything else is a very skill-based combine, and they're so well prepared for combine-type drills that it's very rare for a guy not to look good.
We saw a few pictures of Winston. Look, he's never going to have that chiseled physique, or at least he hasn't to this point.
Right.
What was the talk? Because to me, I looked at it and I said, well, okay, yes, he was sweating a bunch. He threw like 102 passes,
yeah,
which is about 30 more than you usually see on the high end of these workouts. And I'm thinking, well, that's the biggest stamina issue I think you
right.
have. How's that arm strength late in the fourth quarter? How are you holding up? And it seemed like from that standpoint, the functional stamina he needs is there.
Yeah, and to me, you know, you watched far more Florida State than I did last year, I assume. He got better in the second half a lot last year. I thought he usually played well down the stretch. He's a clutch guy. So he certainly, I don't think he was in any, it stands to reason that he was probably in worse shape during the season in terms of the physique and all that than he was when he was preparing for combine and pro day, right? Because you're focused on that and you're focused on how you look going into that. So if he could do that in college, I don't see why he couldn't. That's something that should translate to the NFL. But I think there was an element, as you say, I'm going to throw 102 passes. I'm going to show that I'm in shape. On the 102 pass thing, he got criticized for it a little yesterday. And to me, there's so little that these guys can do. We mentioned the pro day earlier. Everything's set up sort of the same. There's so little that a guy can do to differentiate themselves. Because the book now on the pro day has become, the only thing you can do is hurt yourself. That it's all just part of the equation. Well, I thought yesterday Jameis tried to do something to differentiate himself at the pro day. I'm going to throw 102 passes. I'm going to, you know, and he was doing some stuff early where he brought water to his teammates and he introduced his teammates to the coaches who were there. And he was calling his own plays. He had cards out, and he was calling his own plays. I thought he consciously, and probably smartly so, tried to do a few things to make scouts go, huh, that's different than I've seen, and he did well in that. So, you know, everybody talks about pro days sort of being boring. Sort of being boring and scripted. He threw 102 passes. Oh, that was okay. I mean, why not?
Sure. No, I'm with you.
If he had thrown 30, he'd have been ripped for that.
Of course. If he,
sure.
You know, if he doesn't throw, he's going to get ripped for that. I know there's a, I don't know if there's a growing thing. It's more like, Pro Football Talk pushes the agenda. They're kind of pushing more of the, you know, players versus management agenda in overall, you know, like college players should consider sitting out. That was a big thing with Florio last year with Clowney. Sit out if your draft stock's as high as it is. You can only hurt it. And now they're kind of suggesting that these guys maybe even skip some of this pre-draft process, skip the combine, say, look, here's my tape, like it or leave it. I think it's very tough to be the first guy or handful of guys to do that, though.
Especially because, I mean, I think it would have been very tough for Winston to be that guy.
For obvious reasons,
you know,
right.
Because of all the off-field stuff. So much of what, you know, if I'm a scout yesterday, I'm watching Winston on the field, but I sort of know what that is. I'm over there watching every move that he makes, seeing how he interacts, because you are concerned about the off-field stuff with him. If there's a red flag, that's it. So you're watching how he does that. So it would have been tough for him to be the guy to say, no, I'm not doing that.
Sure. And you know, as you hear Gus Bradley say it, we want to see this guy compete. We want to see if they love football. We want to throw him in that pressure cooker. And that's the NFL mentality. You know, for better or worse, that's what it is. And the first guys that try to buck that system are going to
have will, though. I mean, there's no question somebody will. I think if an Andrew Luck or a Manning or a quarterback who was clearly had no off-field issues and was the guy, I could see not doing it because he's like, you know what? I've already shown what I can do. I did it at the combine. You know, and if you throw at the combine and perform there, I think you can get away with it a lot easier than if you don't.
Man, the Chargers wish that Manning had done that. Then maybe he would have fallen to number two.
Well, we saw it last year. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater was hurt by the fact that he had a pro day. That he threw at that pro day, he was hurt. Well, he tried to do it without the glove and all that stuff, and everyone was questioning what exactly he was trying to accomplish. But he was a higher grade of prospect before than he was after that pro day.
No question.
Johnny O., we appreciate it, man. Thanks for letting me sit in for you here on Jaguars Today this morning.
Anything you need, Mike,
you
I'm here for you.
Awesome. You're the man. Check him out at Jaguars.com. He put up a mock draft, John Osier did, just yesterday, I believe, is when that posted, or the night before.
It was Monday, but you were off, so I get
off.
That
and
you
for
didn't
me, it was yesterday. Thank you very much. John Osier coming back. We'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight asking you today, among the players we've seen mocked to the Jacksonville Jaguars at number 3, which one would be the most foolish selection? We'll do that next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Tomorrow, 4 weeks away, round one of the NFL draft. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with the Jaguars Today.
My goodness.
Down the home stretch we come. It's coming, Tony. It is coming. Let's see what we got here. We got the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships asking you today among the likely suspects, the ones we've heard mentioned, you know, the Williams, the Fowlers, the bevy of pass rushers there, the occasional offensive lineman or wide receiver, which would be the most foolish pick? Now, some people have suggested some things that weren't even, have never been mocked there.
You know? Have they?
Yes, they have. Marcus Mariota would be the most foolish pick. All right, well, show me a mock draft. That is Marcus Mariota going to the Jaguars. I could say show me a reputable mock draft, but that's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it? Is there such a thing, really? Come on. They're all just for fun and speculation.
I've never put one together myself, like 1 to 32. I've never done that.
Yeah, me either.
I've thought about it from time to time, but then I'm like, all right, I really pay attention to where the Jags are or where I think they may trade down into, you know, like 10 to 12 this year. I pay attention to basically that group of picks, and I don't, like, get real deep into it beyond that. So if I was doing a mock draft, it would be mostly me looking at a lot of other people's mock drafts and trying to figure out what I think they think teams are doing. So I was like, what's the point in me even doing that? I'm not evaluating all these players.
Right. And most of the guys, Tony, that do them, when you talk to them, they'll say, I really don't like to do it, but I have to for the website I write for, or, you know, or whatever the organization.
Sure.
This is what people expect. They come for the mock drafts. They're really more about the player evaluation than they are about specifically slotting guys in.
Yep.
Because we all know one or two picks go the wrong way, and, you know, it goes out the window.
No, it really does. And I'll pick my favorite player or two like I do every year. Not necessarily the guy I think the Jaguars are going to take, but my favorite player or two in this draft. I'll do it every year, and then we'll see if he happens to land on this team. It was Michael Floyd the year they drafted Justin Blackmon. He was my favorite player in that draft. It was Ziggy Ansah a couple years ago. And last year, I think it may have even been Aaron Donald last year that was the guy I loved so much.
We should get Hayes Carline in maybe next week from the TU. He did a kind of a Jaguar, call it a mock draft if you want, but here is a potential target in every round for the Jags that may be available and would fit what they want. Because I've been talking with somebody else who's putting together a mock draft for a website, and they've been trying to pick my brain on what I think about the Jags. And I said, first of all, nothing more than an educated guess.
Right.
You know, don't let anybody tell you. There are going to be people that get the pick right. whoever the Jack, and Leonard Williams may be the obvious pick, but there'll be people that get Dante Fowler if Williams is off the board, Amari Cooper maybe even, right? Doesn't mean they know. It just means they guessed right. Okay, there's no knowing.
No.
Dave Caldwell should have shown you that last year, but I like Hayes' selection of Philip Dorsett out of Miami in round three. That makes sense. Whether it comes to pass, whether he's even available, you don't know. But that is Hayes using very good logic. Like, this team went out, they said, Cobb, because he's a slot guy, we want to keep our 2 second-round picks on the outside. Philip Dorsett, I think, fits in as a slot guy and balances out that offense, brings that element of speed. Small guy, but blazing fast. And so that I like the fact that he's really thought this through, and he's the guy, he said last year, Blake Bortles, right? I mean, so give Hayes credit for that.
Yes,
so
did.
We should catch up with Hayes maybe next week as we're inside. We'll be inside 4 weeks from the start of the NFL draft. Fan feedback spotlight today asking you what we said. Who would be the most foolish selection among those mentioned for the Jags at number three? What kind of feedback did we get?
Here's what we got. Something that hasn't been mocked to the Jags in my seeing, starting with Duval Doom. Some running back. Okay, so you don't want him to draft a running back.
Have they been mocked to take a running back at three, Doom? Are you pranking us on April Fools? You're not going to pull a gun full of blanks on me, are you?
I haven't seen it. From Nick, Amari Cooper. You have young wide receivers you drafted with 2 second-round picks last year. Let them develop. He keeps saying it. Hashtag pick Vic. He's all over Vic Beasley, Nick.
That's all right. That's his guy.
From Isaiah, Mariota, and Kevin White. I haven't personally seen either of those guys drafted or mocked to the Jags. Cristiano, anyone not a pass rusher, D-line, except Shane Ray. From Eric, Randy Gregory, dude has bust all over him, in my opinion. From Irish Jaguar, Shane Ray, ew. From Matt, Randy Gregory or any defensive end. Come on, Jags. You were 6th in sacks, fill a need, running back and free safety. Well, it's not going to be a safety, so he's all for the running back there. Shane Ray, that's my answer. Shane Ray, no! That is all from Dusty and Duval. From Joseph, no to Dante Fowler. Hashtag Gator Nation. From Chad, Randy Gregory would be most foolish at 3. Fowler has better tools, body, motor. From David, any running back, we don't need to run the wheels off a good running back while building the team. From Simon, Brandon Scherf. From Demetrius, offensive lineman Brandon Schrieff. There isn't any denying he is a premier O-line prospect, but he isn't a big need nor scheme fit.
All right, well, you know, I don't think, personally, we've talked about this before. Let's say they traded back in that 10 to 12 range.
Right.
Right? I think a lot of things are on the board. Because you, for all you know, maybe they don't like Ray. Maybe they only like 3 of the pass rushers. They could all be gone, including Bud Dupree.
Right.
Right? If you're dropped down to 12. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. Now, obviously, signing Parnell obviously changes that dynamic somewhat. But if you got a guy in that you said, this guy is going to be a dominant player. Think of Zach Martin last year with the Dallas Cowboys, right? They take a guy that ends up playing guard for them in the first round and solidifies what is considered the best offensive line in football. If you think this guy is going to push Zane Beatles out of the spot, plus he's got the ability to play tackle, right? So you've got a bit of an insurance policy in-house if Luke Jokel doesn't get on the horse and get it done. Now, look, I realize how young Luke is, but Luke has not looked like the second overall pick in the draft.
Nope.
Just hasn't, you know. Parnell's locked in. So anyway, I don't think it's likely at all. I'm not advocating for it, but I can see the logic behind it. It's lessened by the fact that they signed Parnell. But regardless, I think Ray, Gregory, I'd be shocked if either of those guys is the third pick in the draft.
Gosh.
I'd be surprised if Beasley was, but I wouldn't be shocked like I would with those other guys.
No.
And I would still be very surprised at this point, although I heard Baselli make the argument today on the drill that, you know, with Odrick coming in and Tyson Alualu being re-signed, and you've got Cindric Marks who will get, you hope, back to full health, and he's under contract for a while. You've got the areas where you're going to really play Leonard Williams. You feel pretty secure right now. But, Tony, if they pass Leonard Williams for a pass rusher, any of these guys, I'd definitely still be surprised. If this guy is as great as, you know, as great as he's supposed to be, it's like the Giants, right? We got Strahan. We got Tuck. Oh, right. You're taking Jason Pierre-Paul in the first round because we think he has the chance to be a great one.
Right.
Okay, and I get it. The age factor with Strahan was getting up there, but you continue to replenish a strength and build and add to a strength. So, you know, right now, I wonder, don't you want to be in Dave Caldwell's mind, know who he thinks are the true alpha unimpeachable candidates, if any, and then what would it take to move off one or two of those guys if they're there? Because if there's two of them that aren't quarterbacks, you're definitely going to get one. If there's one and it's Leonard Williams, maybe you will, maybe you won't. Maybe Mariota goes second, maybe he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And if Leonard Williams is staring you in the face, what are you going to have to blow me away with if I truly think this guy is a cut above every other prospect and there's a drop down to the next tier of players from Leonard Williams?
Right.
So we'll find it out in less than 30 days now.
It's here, man.
It's coming up. All right. Thanks to John Osier from Jaguars.com for stopping by. Scott Wright from DraftCountdown.com. Ryan O'Halloran's in studio with us tomorrow. It will be 4 weeks out from the start of the NFL draft. We got XL Primetime on the other side. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, and all the aforementioned, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.